Thanks, a podcast about how the oil and gas industry can future-proof against rising social risks and lead the world into the energy future. I'm Tisha Schuler, your host and the principal of Adamantine Energy. Everyone in the industry is facing massive disruption, and we talk this season about how game-changing leaders can embrace this disruption. Today's show, I speak with Ryan Keyes. He's president and co-founder of Triple Crown Resources. I was introduced to Ryan because his company did airborne methane surveys, and they really figured out how to harness the data to bring profit to their company. You're going to hear all about that. Ryan's a recognized millennial leader. He holds a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from the University of Texas at Austin, a master's in petroleum engineering from Texas A&M. So we already know that Ryan knows how to hold a dichotomy, those two alma maters. There's a lot of interest in this interview, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. You can learn more about Ryan in our show notes. You are welcome to reach out to me and learn more about our Energy Thinks podcast at energythinks.com. Now here's my conversation with game-changing leader, Ryan Keyes. Well, Ryan Keyes, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me on the Energy Thinks podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm familiar with the platform and grateful to be grouped in this disruptor group. So hopefully we can make that happen.
Well, I will jump right into that because in 2020, Heart Energy named you to their 40 under 40. And in the interview, you shared that the independent E&P business models have to evolve. And I want to help define what that looks like. I think that's pretty exciting and bold statement. So tell us, what does that look like?
Well, a lot of it is, the world still needs a lot of oil and gas, probably more so than the average person thinks we need. All this capital has left because the narrative is dominated by, well, oil and gas is, yesterday's news. Renewables are going to take market share, and they are. But energy growth worldwide is still happening. So, oil and gas is ceding market share, but that pie is getting bigger. So even if oil and gas market share, the total energy needs is going down, the absolute consumption of oil and gas, according to just about every forecast we see, is flat for at least a decade, if not more. And the amount of capital in this space is barely, not even sufficient to keep production, that supply, flat. So we have a narrative problem. This industry has never been good at marketing itself, connecting with the end consumer, how important we are. And we need spokespeople. We need leaders to communicate that. We also have to evolve with the needs of society. And we live in a democracy or a republic where we vote our politicians in, but we also vote for their pocketbooks as investors. So if investors in the United States want to see oil and gas companies with low carbon emissions, that's what we have to give them. Not only is it the right thing to do, but it's how we retain capital in this space and supply the world with its energy, with affordable energy. So we've seen the majors make just huge changes in their strategy, and that fits the majors, where they're kind of okay, an energy company, especially the European majors, they call themselves energy companies now. Yeah, divesting oil and gas assets and recycling those proceeds into renewables development. But really, it's just sort of an energy conglomerate where they're kind of taping together two different businesses at top. And you can make carbon goals as a business, but that carbon, that oil and gas, is still going to be produced. What it's doing is just depressing the valuation. It's still going to be produced. So if we want to make real life carbon reductions, we need it done kind of at the asset level. And that's what Triple Crown is really interested in. We lead the Permian Basin in carbon emissions, scope 1, scope 2 carbon emissions. Scope 3 is still kind of fuzzy how that's defined. And even if we should be calculating it. But if we just isolate scope 1 and scope 2, Triple Crown's leading the Permian Basin based on the data that we have. And that has put us in a position where the limited capital in the space, especially the private space. It's so selective. And that is one of the, if not the highest, you know, high priority criterion is low carbon emissions. Be good at ESG. And that's a whole nother discussion. What should we be focusing on? But I think everyone will agree that the carbon emissions matter the most, and methane emissions, being good at, you know, no flaring, keeping methane emissions at a minimum, and what else, other ways we can decarbonize our own operations. So we're very, very focused on that, as well as being very, very good at developing oil and gas. And, you know, eventually what we can do is, you know, these two primary components of reducing our carbon intensity, you know, there's just no flaring, except only in the, you know, emergency circumstances, and keeping methane emissions at zero. This will continue to evolve. And eventually oil and gas, you know, especially in West Texas and likely in Colorado as well, with the development of all these renewables, you know, both West Texas and Colorado have amazing solar resource. So eventually we will not only have to work together with renewables developers, it probably makes the most sense for oil and gas companies to develop their own renewables and take advantage of all the asset level synergies that they create. So all those things are what kind of long-term goals of Triple Crown, and hope other independents follow suit.
This is so interesting, because you bring up a number of interesting threads that some find contradictory, but you have found a way to weave them together. One is that I think it's really not arguable that there's going to be significant oil and gas demand for decades. And we want the best producers producing that resource, as opposed to pressuring through ESG or other incentives companies to divest from those resources. So that's just an interesting idea that I've been really thinking about. And the other thing that you described, Ryan, is an evolution. So I have been thinking a lot about the energy transition being the energy evolution, and therefore there's room for companies to evolve. And you're describing business models cognizant of these asset level opportunities to produce energy. So let me ask you a little bit more about Triple Crown, because and how you think about, I just had Scott Sheffield on the podcast, and he's been a champion of reducing flaring in the Permian. But many smaller operators will say, well, we just can't do that. We don't have the resources to do that. And you very rarely see a small operator stepping out to say, we're going to lead on emissions reductions and flaring. And you already cited some stats that your company is acquiring the data to articulate. Can you talk about how you decided to lead that charge? And is it ultimately motivated by investor pressure, or are there other reasons that you decided to take that stance? When it's not obvious nor popular among smaller operators.
Right. And part of this is, you know, if we're given this edict, and some of it should be our own rules that we play by. I mean, we should not be emitting methane. Technology is there. It's there right now, where we can do all of this and do it profitably, regardless of what outside investor sentiment is doing. So the best way to ensure compliance with all of this is to make these activities profitable, so that we're not just reacting to the pressure. We're running towards the goal, because it's in everyone's best interest. So that's what we've been most focused on, is how do we make all of this as profitable as possible? And we've been pretty outspoken about the profitability of reducing our methane emissions. So this is a great example. We have a couple great partners to date. We started this about a year ago. Our total cost of that we have spent both detecting and remediating our methane leaks to date over the last 12 months, it's about $90,000. So what we have received from that in terms of captured methane, the value of the captured methane and the NGLs, natural gas liquids associated with it, is about $1.3 million. So if I were to bring anyone a business opportunity, not methane, it could be selling cupcakes or whatever, where the cost is $90,000 and I make $1.3 million, regardless of what that is, that's a great business. So this is how we ensure this happens rapidly and with really enthusiastic adoption, is just, we just make it profitable. We have the tools, we have the technology. What's left is this, it's kind of a perspective. We have to make a choice, a very conscious choice, to prioritize these things. If you do that, there are very smart people in this industry that might not be prioritized. And it's not been communicated properly. But if we prioritize things, these things, we absolutely can make this profitable. And you make it profitable, again, it's just going to happen very rapidly and organically. And we can be regulated to do these things, but those regulations aren't going to matter because we're going to want to comply with them and over comply with them. So that's been Triple Crown's focus is just the profitability aspect of all of this.
Ryan, the most interesting framing statement you made in all of that interesting explanation is the idea of playing by our own rules and that being a motivator for being running towards these goals, which I find really interesting as an inspiration rather than a reaction or a defensive posture on these items. We were introduced by Steve Diker, the CEO of Kairos Aerospace, because he was so impressed by the way that you are willing to talk publicly, as you just did, about the methane leaks that you captured. Now, the striking things of your cupcake methane bake sale is that obviously you captured a lot of methane. So just tell us a little bit about just how you have the courage to talk about how you embarked upon this and you found these leaks and you took care of them. Because a lot of companies would say, we don't want to go out there and talk about this until it looks perfect. But you're talking right about the change. And so how did you develop the wherewithal to do that?
You know, it was kind of, it's just an awareness that we looked at the data and it's just about, you know, framing the data in a way and just being honest with it. It's like, we're not being like, we can do this profitably. After we started objectively looking at the numbers, it's just like, well, gosh, it was a huge realization for us. When, like, after we found out how much we were leaking, and it was Steve Diker's company, Kairos, that did the survey. They've been a great partner in all this. So we had to get over how much we were leaking first. And it's easier for Triple Crown to come out and say this because we're private. We only have, you know, we have a limited number of equity investors. It's much harder for a pioneer to come out and say this because they have, well, millions of investors. And you know, ours understand that they're more tolerant of it. We're not going to have an overreaction from our investor base. So it's easier for a private company like us to go out and do this. But again, once we got over the shock about how much we were leaking, because the EPA, the current regulations, they are changing very rapidly. I'm happy to get into this if you want. The current calculation indicated we were leaking negligible methane. They're based on some antiquated regulations. The as measured, what we was actually leaking instead of what the spreadsheet numbers said we were leaking, it was massive. So there's this kind of this shock. So we had to acknowledge that first. We had to look at the data and just be honest with it. Like, we are leaking way more than we thought we were leaking. Number one, that's unfortunate, but what it does is create a gigantic opportunity. So you can't fix what you don't acknowledge, number one. So we had to acknowledge it. And I was just, okay, if we get out there and just say, you know, hey, like, if we all do this in unison, the narrative, you know, our collective behavior in oil and gas and with respect to emissions can change. We start really contributing to that narrative. So that was really it. And we didn't really get paid for this, but if Triple Crown can be associated with that kind of being the tip of the spear of that narrative in our own unique, in our own way that we can contribute to, that's really all the payment we need, because it makes our investors happy and opens the door to other investors. So we thought, just like, let's just be open and honest about this. And at first, I thought, you know, that the first presentation I made was at Doug Permian about 6 months ago, and I was kind of hesitant. It's like, you know, what is the reaction going to be? It was overwhelmingly positive. It was a lot of thank you for coming out and just showing your data, because there's a lot of people who are afraid of what this says and how to interpret it. There's also a lot of confusion,
right?
And for good reason. There's just the goalposts are moving. It's not because there's some conspiracy, but all of these numbers, you know, this movement, this let's reduce methane emissions, but by what to and by what standard? We have a bunch of opinions, and they're coalescing every day. But it's an evolution, so it's frustrating, and so that's what we kind of decided was, let's just be open about it, our experience, because if we're going through this, everyone else is too.
The 2021 shareholder proxy season held important lessons for oil and gas companies, with investors imposing new demands on targeted firms. What does all this mean for your company? Adam Attine's latest white paper gives you our top line proxy season insights. Download it today at energythinks.com/papers. That's energythinks.com/papers. And now, back to the show.
I think this is really important. And one of the things we end up talking about a lot in our writing at Adamantine in this podcast is how industry often does not want to be first movers, but there's a lot of incentive to be fast followers. And so in many ways, Triple Crown did that hard tip of the spear work that now provides cover for other companies to go out and do the work and show the difference. And to your point, EPA's emission factor regulations, where you estimate your emissions, a reckoning is certainly on the way. And companies are going to have to show measured data, and they're going to have to reconcile their estimates with their actuals. And the sooner companies get on the bandwagon, the better. And so it's really exciting how you started that. So let me give you a chance to expand upon something that I read about you in Digital Wildcatters earlier this year. You talked about how, as you just mentioned, companies want to detect leaks, but they're not putting this into a business model mindset, a profit-driven mindset. So you've talked about how it can be that, but can you talk a little bit more about the practical components of that? How do you talk to your executive team? How do you set it up in incentive structures, if that's relevant? How do you talk to your investors? What are the practical considerations for companies that are saying, okay, we buy it. How do we get going on this?
Yeah. And the biggest one is, I mean, it's going to sound like, you know, cliche, but I mean, you do need buy-in at every level. Every person has to prioritize it. Like, this is one of our biggest priorities as a business. And that has to be foundational, you know, to all of this. And especially if you call yourself a, you know, data-driven business, you get some data, like, what does it mean? How do we integrate this? How do we either reduce risk or, and as it turns out, make money on it? So it's just, you know, being objective and honest with your data. But yeah, I mean, making it a priority. And at bigger organizations that have more inertia, that's more difficult because processes are more set in place. And, you know, we're a great size because, you know, we have a pretty good sized operation, but with a first name basis with every employee at Triple Crown, know a lot about them. So it's easier to get company-wide buy-in. That's another advantage that Triple Crown has. So it takes less time to pivot and make it a priority. And you know, bigger companies aren't just going to be challenged by this just because of their size and inertia. Mm-hmm. So everyone bought in. It's like, here's why we're doing this. Here's why it's important. Here's the part that everyone can play. We do have full company-wide buy-in for this. This is part of our identity, and it's important. And we have people being, you know, folks at Triple Crown, very proactive about this, making sure we stay at the tip of the spear. We stay at the leading edge because this is a competitive advantage we have.
I'd love to ask you a little bit more about that, because I was just thinking about how you operationalize that. So there's the cultural component you're speaking to, the buy-in, but then there's putting that innovation that oil and gas operations is so good at. How do you mobilize that innovation talent to keep coming to you with the next solution?
That's a good question. And a lot of it is finding that balance between direction and giving people autonomy and letting people own it, you know, like own part of the narrative of the business. I mean, and this is massive. And everyone wants to be, you know, have that autonomy where they can be creative and aren't just following some rigid procedure. So a lot of it's that. Another might sound cliche, but it's just having really good people and then making sure interests are aligned and keeping people motivated. And there's a comfort level, you know, regardless of where you are, whether you're an executive at a small E&P or a manager at a big E&P or something, that there's this comfort level that folks might have with, depending on the person who is reporting to you, you know, how much autonomy and freedom they get, you know, our interests align. So that's definitely part of the culture at Triple Crown. People have a lot of freedom to go do this.
That's really interesting. And I bet that is going to contribute to your thoughts on my next question, which is our industry, like every industry, is facing a real challenge with talent retention and talent recruiting. Mm-hmm. And as a leader, I am presuming a millennial leader yourself, how do you attract and retain diverse workforce, including Gen Z, for our listeners, that youngest generation just coming out of college now, and our millennials who are leaders who have just turned 40 in the last year or two? What are your thoughts about employee retention and recruiting and diversity?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is there's a bigger priority with younger generations, millennial and Gen Z. They're just not profit driven, and not saying older generations are, but there's more, more of a waiting, and you can quantify this in a number of ways, but where does a young person decide to go work and be enthusiastic there and be a contributor? And, a lot of it is a social dividend. There are a few different studies, a few different economic studies on this, but, having that, well, we're making money and we're doing this for the world. And communicating that properly, and we can say very legitimately, like, okay, number one, we're providing low cost, reliable energy for the world. Of course, that's why we were formed. But we're doing it in a way where we're leading that our industry in carbon emissions, where this world is going, this country is going, and we're innovating and allowing people to be creative with their talents, their innate talents creates a lot more satisfaction. I mean, of course, balancing that with the practical needs and the operational needs is always a challenge. But we found that sweet spot, we think, between being a good investment and also being having that extra social dividend, being paid to our team members. So we want to keep that culture going. It's really valuable.
That's novel. I have spoken to many oil and gas executives, and you're the first to talk about a social dividend in our work. So that's going to be a really interesting idea for us to continue to explore. In that spirit, we have a lot of millennial listeners because, they're the future of our industry, and they're really interested about how we pivot from being disrupted to being disruptors. But what advice do you have for them? Why should they stay in this industry when everyone from, grandpa to their friends at the barbecue are saying you're working in an industry of the past? What advice do you have for them?
There's narratives often overshoot reality, and you want to be at the absolute bleeding edge of innovation and thought. Find that radical, nuanced middle ground, and it is it's radical because it's not radical. It's nuanced. It is a balanced view using actual facts instead of narrative to then create the narrative. And that's what we can do with all of this. We can still generate hydrocarbons, profitably, and we can do this simultaneously lowering our collective carbon emission, meeting the energy needs of the world while with an eye on the goals and emissions targets for the U.S., for Paris Climate Accords, whoever you're looking towards. We can do this and still generate and still produce hydrocarbons profitably. That's pretty radical. That's a radical thought. It almost sounds too good to be true, but we can do this. We get the whole world, the whole industry moving in this direction. And yes, we can do this. And getting that edgy, that say, hey, oil and gas is part of the solution. I mean, a 25-year-old saying that and having the data to back it up, that is edgy. There are not a lot of people out there with that viewpoint, but that is reality. That is absolutely reality. And the more we can play in this nuanced, radical middle ground where not very many people are brave enough to play in, the faster it happens.
Absolutely. So. Ryan, that's so interesting and inspiring to hear an oil and gas company CEO talk to our emerging leaders in that way, because I do believe that addressing carbon emissions happens faster, better, cheaper at scale with the oil and gas industry fully engaged. And that doesn't happen without our talent, our millennial talent being at the wheel with us, figuring out how to push it forward. So I love that. So speaking of radical, nuanced edges, Ryan, give us some thoughts and feel free to go as far off script as you want about what's next. What are the ideas that you're thinking about in your leadership strategy, in your style, in your company? What are the things that happen next that continue to bring innovative change to your company and to our industry?
Well, it's there's the balance between in the more boring to talk about, maybe, but you know, very, very important, obviously. Like we still have to be very profitable, you know, producing oil and gas. So that's number one. So we're so capital intensive, though, and it's such a big operation. If you allow some space for kind of, you know, just indulging thought experiments. Okay, what about this? What about that? You know, how can we go from here to there? There being like, you know, just an energy company, your prototypical energy transition company, but the one that does that on the asset level. Yeah, let's be the lowest cost producer and lowest carbon producer of oil and gas on the planet, number one, and also the lowest cost producer of renewable energy. We can do that. It takes a conscious choice. And it takes some of these steps between here and there. We don't know those yet, but you get the right people and motivate them properly. We do have the tools to get there. And it involves just staying in that radical middle ground, that nuanced middle ground. So E&Ps should be, especially those in West Texas. We see all the wind turbines out there. We see all the solar arrays going up. Interesting stat, West Texas has more solar either permitted, planned, or under construction right now than California. That's not a stat that really gets shared very much, but there is a massive amount out there. And it's because we're blessed with good solar resource. Our takeaway in terms of high voltage transmission lines, it's getting a little clogged right now where we need to build that out, but it was built out thoroughly 15, 20 years ago. And we're taking advantage of that now. So why are these two different companies? I go, what drives me crazy, you drive around West Texas, you see roads, and there's one right next to our asset. And you know, a road going to a pad for a big wind turbine. And on the entrance to the road, it says no oil field traffic. You go down another 100 yards as a road going to a pad for oil and gas, say no wind traffic. It's like, what a colossal waste of money. Why are these not, like, how much money could both of these projects have saved if we were using, you know, the same resources? So this is how oil and gas companies can be the lowest cost producers of renewable energy on the planet, is because we're building all of that infrastructure anyway, or a lot of it. We're building a lot of that infrastructure anyway, those civil costs that go in. The land is already there. We have surface use agreements. We have all the relationships already there. These things can and should be planned in tandem to lower the cost of both. And at the top, you know, this energy company, and it's not, go back to what the majors are doing, Total and Shell, and to some extent Exxon. You know, they have oil and gas assets and renewable assets, and they're just separate. There's not a lot of synergy there, and they combine at the top. What we're talking about here for independents to do is to get the actual asset level synergy going on, where they're sharing infrastructure and you're sharing actual people. And those people are incentivized to do both and do both of them really well. So ultimately, there are too many tailwinds for this to happen. I'm sorry, for this to not happen in some shape or form. But it is going to take a lot of people in the oil and gas industry to make this a priority, because we have the relationships, we have the infrastructure, we have the lease agreements and surface use agreements, and we're the ones who can make this happen, and we should, and everyone should benefit.
Super interesting. So as a final takeaway to our audience, we're wrapping up 1 year and starting another. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the values that drive you in your leadership and what you are optimistic about in the new year or in the next chapter.
I'll answer your last question first. You know, with all this uncertainty and methane regulation, we've been involved with Kairos, other firms, and have been speaking quite a bit to the EPA about where these regulations are going. And the EPA and we actually spoke to staffers at the White House about this too, with Kairos. So there's been a lot of involvement. Triple Crown has been involved. I've personally been involved in these conversations. Other folks at Triple Crown have too. And what's been very interesting is not only did the White House, which is ostensibly anti-oil and gas, which they're not very shy about that, that could just be politics, but the solicitation of the oil and gas industry by the EPA for how do we get this new technology approved? So in working with the oil and gas industry to say, okay, what technology is most cost effective, or just what is Yeah, what the cost down as low as we can, and not be overly burdensome to create, you know, which creates perverse incentives. So we've been very involved with that. I've been very involved with that, and several conversations over the last several months. And their proposals, their initial proposals, I mean, the most amazing thing happened. After reading and digesting their proposals, it was very clear that they listened. They listened, and you just go treat people with respect. And yeah, maybe it's not perfect if you're, you know, an oil and gas executive, the methane regulations aren't perfect, but we can work with these. We can definitely work with them. And it's clear they listen to the industry. So I thought that was amazing with all of the negative news, with all the how polarized this country is with everything. Oil companies and the EPA got together and were making regulations that more or less work for the oil and gas industry. No, not perfect, but they work. It's not overly burdensome. And I thought that was amazing. And it wouldn't have happened without very enthusiastic participation from the oil and gas industry. Mm-hmm. That includes firms like Kairos. And
it speaks to the power of shared aspirations. When companies are saying, we too want to reduce methane emissions, let's figure out the best way to get there. It mm-hmm. changes the dynamic. And it's encouraging to me to hear that had on the ground, pragmatic, implementable results. So congrats on that. So let me give you a second. I interrupted you to talk a little bit about what values are going to take you into the next year.
A lot of it is my favorite quality in people is you know, the commonality with my favorite people, like either in the industry or, you know, friends or whatever, people who are curious, and that there's an openness with a curious person that you get. It's just hard to adapt if you're not curious. You have to almost want to evolve. So that just embracing all of the change, and there is uncertainty among all of this, and it's a lot, you know, having to deal with all this uncertainty. And that's, humans evolved to not like uncertainty, but we do know enough where we can clearly define a goal. We can see it. We don't necessarily know the exact steps to get there, but we do have enough certainty where we can be confident that we will get there. We can be an energy company that still produces a lot of low cost, reliable energy. So yeah, that curiosity is it, and almost, you know, almost using that as to give us as an industry, or at least the folks at Triple Crown Energy, is like, hey, here's what we know. Let's be creative. Here are our guardrails. Let's work within that and just try to make this work and make money doing it.
That's a great way.
Curiosity.
That's a great way for us to go into 2022. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
All right. Thank you for having me. Really enjoyed it.
That's our episode for today. Thanks so much to Ryan Keyes for taking the time to share his insights with us. And the game-changing insight today for me was he had several ways of framing this pivot from being disrupted to being the disruptor. And one was, hey, we should play by our own rules. We should decide that these are the end goals and run toward them. And I thought that was a very optimistic and engaging framework. I'd like to know what you found insightful. So visit our podcast website at energythings.com/podcast and let me know. I would love it if here at the end of the year, you would take a moment and review us. I want to thank Adon Rubio, Lindsay Slaughter, and Michael Tanner for making the Energy Things podcast possible. Until next time, I'm Tisha Schuler, wishing you and yours happiness, prosperity, and good health.